You already know that Sovereign makes the world's best resume CV parser. But did you know that Sovereign also makes the world's best AI matching engine? Only Sovereign's AI matching engine goes beyond the buzzwords. With Sovereign, you control how the engine thinks. With every match, the Sovereign engine tells you what matched and exactly how each matching document was scored. And if you don't agree with the way it scored the matches, you can simply move some sliders to tell it to score the matches your way. No other engine on Earth gives you that combination of insight and control. With Sovereign, matching isn't some frustrating black box, trust us, it's magic, one-shot deal like all the others. No. With Sovereign, matching is completely understandable, completely controllable, and actually, kind of fun. Sovereign. Software so human, you'll want to take it to dinner.
Hide your kids. Lock the doors. You're listening to HR's most dangerous podcast. Chad Soash and Joel Cheeseman are here to punch the recruiting industry right where it hurts. Complete with breaking news, brash opinion, and loads of snark. Buckle up, boys and girls. It's time for the Chad and Cheese Podcast.
In the long line of interviews where we talk to people much smarter than us.
That's easy.
Welcome Somi Ariane to the show, everybody.
There we go.
She is. You ready for this, Chad?
Yes.
She is a tech philosopher, filmmaker, author, entrepreneur, speaker, and a, quote, transition architect. And she's the author of a new book entitled Career Fear and How to Beat It. Get the perspective, mindset, and skills you need to future-proof your work life. That's a mouthful. Somi, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
What did I miss in the bio? What else should we know about you before getting into the Q&A?
I guess the main thing that I'm working on these days that maybe the people haven't got the memo yet because it's only 3 or 4 months is I have a think tank for women in business and technology that's been taking all of my time. You know, that's started as a side hustle, but it's becoming my main hustle now. So that's probably the main thing, the think tank for women in business and technology.
So talk about that. Our listeners might not know.
Yeah. I use the term think tank quite loosely. This is a big platform that I'm building where women will be able to find new opportunities. And the main kind of thrust of it is the fact that there is the fact that women have been held back in business and technology for many years. And when you look at, you go back to the past few hundred years, you know, since the start of the Industrial Revolution, when we've actually had entrepreneurial endeavors, the women have been in the shadows. And the same thing is in science and in STEM field. So the whole point of this is to bring women back into, bring them into, maybe even for the first time, into these fields, and trying to get women to think about, or young girls especially, and think about changing that mindset of, girls play with dolls and boys, are engineers, and changing that mindset and getting girls to actually think about building businesses and learning how to use technology. And the bottom line is I want to change this scenario where you look at the top 10% or top, even 1% of people who are in business and technology, the leaders, they're all men. You know, you look at the top 10 companies
yes.
that run the world, right? Top 10 companies run the world, 5 in the US, Microsoft, Apple, Amazon, Facebook, and Google. And mm-hmm. then in China, we have Xiaomi, Huawei, Alibaba, Baidu, and Tencent, all run by men. There's not one woman in that picture. I want to change that.
So today, you're founder, managing director at Smart Cookie. You're an opinion columnist at CEO World Magazine, obviously author of this new book. But before that, you were a visa officer in the Netherlands.
In the Netherlands Embassy. Yeah,
the Netherlands Embassy. You're a program officer for the International Organization for Migration and a program officer for the UN. Yeah. So what brought you to talking about careers, robots, millennials, marketing? What actually brought you here? Why do this?
Well, I have a very diverse background. I suppose my biggest passion in life is philosophy. You know, the thing that interests me more than anything else is understanding life, understanding what is the meaning of life, why are we here, what is this all going, where is this all going, and what's this all about. And since I was a child, I was always asking that, and I was terrible at math, and I wasn't generally a good student. And they told me that I wouldn't amount to anything. And my father said, so what are you going to do? And I said that I want to get paid to think, you know, like I want to make a living to think. And my dad said, like, that's like, nobody gets paid to think. And I was like, yeah, there are philosophers like, you know, Aristotle and Nietzsche. And he was like, well, first of all, nobody will pay you to think. And secondly, those were men, and women can't become philosophers. And, like Nietzsche didn't exactly have the best of, endings. And I was like, no, I'm going to become a philosopher.
It sounds like to me, and I have two daughters, and Joel has a daughter. It sounds like you actually put your foot down and said to the world, fuck you, I'm going to be who I want to be.
Amen.
Exactly. Actually, there is a Persian poem. I'm actually going to get it calligraphed and put it on my, because I come from a very traditional, you know, my parents had no money growing up, and they forced me to marry my first cousin, which is quite common in Iran, when I was 17. And I was like, no, I don't want to do that. And you know, went through it caused a whole breakdown of family relationships. And I was like, I don't care that it's going to break all the family relationships. So everybody thinks that, you know, I'm quite selfish. But I was like, you know, no, it's my life, and I'm not going to let that happen. And there's this Persian poem that says, like, I'm not the one that would let the world fuck with me. You know? and if the world fucks with me, I'm going to fuck it up. you can beep that if that was.
Amen. Well, that, let's go ahead and parlay that into the next topic. The world is fucking with us. It's called COVID.
Absolutely. Exactly.
In many companies are focusing on, or at least they're talking about safety per se, and they're bringing in more robots. I mean, we see Microsoft robots they're replacing news producers. Tyson robots are replacing butchers. The Gap robots, and Walmart and Amazon for warehousing. I mean, the list goes on. So, I mean, this to me, and we were talking before the interview, this seems like a fairly simple math equation. Humans should be talking about universal basic income, not about their next job. Can you give us some insights on what you found?
Well, I wrote an article. It's on my LinkedIn. I hope that your listeners will check it out. It's 4,500 words, so prepare for it. It's going to take a while. And it took me a week to write it. And it's been probably my most engaged article to date on LinkedIn. And it's called COVID-19 and the Future of Business, Economy, and Democracy. COVID-19, however it came upon us, COVID-19 it has accelerated that trend. It's definitely making it easier. I guess it's making it more acceptable for people to accept the adoption of of robots, right? And so when I wrote my book, I talked about all of these things in it. And my book, I finished it at the end of 2019, and then it was going to go to publication. It was supposed to come out in July, which it did come out a little bit, like I think about 2-3 weeks later than it was supposed to because of COVID. But essentially, my point is that when I was writing that, COVID hadn't happened. I was predicting a 5 to 15 year transition. All I can say is that instead of 5 to 15, now think about 1 to 5 years.
Yeah. Summarize the book for us real quick. Career Fair and How to Beat It. If you're describing the book to someone in our listeners, what would it be about?
So at the bottom line is it all comes down to my philosophy of transition architecture. You know, what transition architecture is about is understanding that we should not think about necessarily transformation, like digital transformation. We need to think about constant transition. The bottom line is, if you go with the idea of singularity, you know, basically they're saying, and people like Ray Kurzweil, that in the next 20, 25 years, we're going to come to a point where AI is going to supersede human level intelligence, and there will be pretty much nothing to do for 90% of society. Well, that's already happening. You know, I don't see like anybody who says that's not true. It's just simple math. Computers are becoming smarter in an accelerated fashion, you know, it almost exponentially. Humans aren't. We have a skull, and our brain is limited to what we have in that skull. And it's like, it's not going to expand any further. We're not going to be able to learn any faster. We're not going to be able to compress data any faster. You know, even if you were connected, you know, like companies like Neuralink, right? They're now creating Elon Musk's Neuralink. You know, even if there was a way that I could connect myself to, say, my phone directly so that I could have access to all the information in Wikipedia, it doesn't necessarily mean that I would be able to process that information with the same speed, right? So if I can't, so what is data processing? You know, what is understanding? What is knowledge? You know, it's essentially being able to compress that data that you take from the world and you know, to be able to summarize it and understand it, right? So if we can't speed up that up any more than what it is now, maybe to some degree, you know, you can improve your nutrition or whatever, but we can't really process it any faster. And there is the possibility of brain machine interface, but we don't yet know how that could work and whether it would be accessible to everybody. So it's math. Machines are superseding in every way.
Greetings from Evergreen Podcasts. We're rolling out a listener survey and we want to hear from you. The information in the survey will help us gather statistics and in turn make our shows more appealing to advertisers. I know most people don't like ads, but this is one of the only ways our shows make money and help keep their lights on. We promise it will only take a few minutes, but the impact on our podcasts will be tremendous. As a token of our appreciation, we'll randomly select one lucky participant each month to win an exclusive merchandise package from Evergreen Podcasts. Head to evergreenpodcast.com/listener survey to help a show and possibly get some free stuff for doing so. We can't thank you enough for the support. Now back to the show.
We both have children. Chad's are a little bit older than mine. I have as young as a 3-year-old. Oh. What skills should they be learning to sort of survive in this future? And you talk about like how quickly change is going to happen. Summary, would you get in terms of, you know, how fast is change happening? What skills will be in demand and what should essentially younger people for sure be prepared for and doing the work? Because I'm guessing that schools are ill prepared with the changes that are happening and how fast they're happening.
Basically, you must have a technical skill or several technical skills, preferably. So I talk about this quite a lot in the book in the sense that you need to be multi-skilled. That's very important. You know, you think about like, I used to be in a death metal band, you know, like I know that that's not exactly, yeah, but it has had an impact, you know, it's definitely had an impact. I used to be in a band. I did a lot of fitness modeling when I was younger. I have a background in politics and philosophy, you know, filmmaking, you know, now I'm teaching myself Python. So it's like constantly learning. So you need to have technical skills. You've got to have that. But in addition to that, you need to have 4 human skills. And that's what there are 4 chapters in the book that are about that. And those 4 human skills are emotional intelligence, contextual creativity, critical thinking, and mindfulness. And when I talk about mindfulness, I'm not talking about sitting there 20 minutes a day and meditating. I'm talking about full participation with the world, with what's happening. Like, for example, since the beginning of last year, October, I haven't even watched a single Netflix series or film or movie or nothing. Because I think that when you spend a lot of time watching, you know, doing entertainment stuff, because you need to be in full participation. Instead, on Saturdays, all of my day, like I wake up in the morning, sometimes, you know, I sit there with my pajama and this is my, like, absolutely my relaxation to practice coding and math, you know, like seriously, like.
So you don't Netflix and chill. You don't Netflix and chill. You math and chill.
Algebra, yeah, algebra and math and algebra and chill, yeah, or Python and chill. And why am I doing that? I don't want to become a coder. I don't need to do that. I'm teaching myself that because I'm hiring people who are going to need to have those skills. It's kind of like if you want to be a producer. produce a director, it's so much better if you can also film and edit. Not because you need to do it, but because you know how to speak to your to a crew, to your editors. So it's really, I think, important that people learn lots of different technical skills, you know, and get really good at a few things and have an intermediate understanding of a few others and some basic understanding of some of the others. And in addition to that, have those four skills.
For the bulk of the human population, we're mostly all stupid. Okay. We're not doing algebra on the couch. We're watching Netflix. I guess the question is, how do we start to provide premium types of content that push our brains in that direction? Because instead of watching all of this reality TV bullshit that's out there, mm-hmm. there are a ton of great documentaries or what have you to actually watch and consume. How do you do that? And how do you do that as two things, not just as a parent, but also as a boss? Mm-hmm. The millennial disruption that you talk about is definitely, I think it's here. I don't know that it's coming. I think that it's here. How do you as a mentor, as a boss, try to help those individuals steer toward that versus, mm-hmm. you know, reality TV?
I think you do it by leading, you lead by example. You know, like I have a team and we are like, I think they would be better people to talk to tell you how I do it with them. I push them. I really push them. You know, there's no easy moment. There's no day that's like yesterday in our office, you know, in our mm-hmm. team. And some of them work from here, some of them work remotely, but no 2 days are the same. And it's a constant battle of, you know, them pushing themselves. And everybody has read the book, and, you know, I give them examples of like when things go wrong. And I'm like, this is an example of critical thinking that I was talking to you about. This is your lack of critical thinking, or this is your lack of contextual creativity. This is what I want from you. You need to just think. I want you to bring something new to the table, something unique, something that's not canned, that I can't get from AI. And I show them examples of like how a lot of the stuff that they're now doing could be very easily, you know, it's just that somebody hasn't yet created an application for it, but they can all be automated, you know, mm-hmm. like 80% of it. So you do it by leading by example. If I sit here and watch Netflix and, you know, like they come in and we talk about some reality show last night, no, there's no conversation of that.
How do you shut that down, though, Somi? I mean, how do you shut that down? It's like, no, we're not talking about that stupid shit. That's dumb. You stop talking about that. I mean, how do you shut that down? Do you just kind of like, do you pivot into something more intelligent?
I guess I'm quite a dominant character, you know. So if I'm in the room, you know, nobody dares talk. Don't forget, I come from Iran, right? Dictatorship. No, I'm joking.
Is there a dunce hat they have to put on? I mean, it's almost like this public shaming that when you're around so many.
No, I'm joking. Everybody, look, we have written our values on the wall, and uh-huh. you know, our values are speed. Right? Number one is speed and honesty and curiosity. If you don't have these things, you don't work for my company. We need to develop curiosity in ourselves, uh-huh. and we need to help our young, and, you know, I'm like the girls who work with me, you know, they're like my children. I try to instigate that sense of curiosity in them. And if we are, say, with a client and somebody looks at their phone or something and they're not fully engaged, like, that person is probably not going to last long. I need full engagement. I don't take anything less than that, because we are like, that's what the company is called, Smart Cookie Media. We only hire smart cookies.
Okay, we get it. You're a tiger mom. Okay.
We talk a lot about recruiting on the show. It's sort of the main theme of what we do. And recruiting and automation and AI, it's sort of a scary environment, right? Because it's yes. two-sided. Not only are they're going to be less recruiters, theoretically, because a lot of things like scheduling interviews, sourcing candidates, a lot of that's going to be AI and smart technology. And on the other side, there are fewer people to recruit. So you're almost getting a double whammy. And I'm curious, you say in one of the videos that I watched about you, you talk about outsourcing our brain. And the equivalent of that you talk about is, you know, when we cooked our food, we outsourced our digestion. I want you to talk about outsourcing your brain and how recruiters and professionals in general will have to be able to live in this world and what that world looks like. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, definitely. So as humans, we have three main capacities. Those are physical, cognitive, and emotional, in that order I put it. So the first thing that we did, that's what really put us on the top of the food chain historically, was that we outsourced a lot of our physical tasks, right? So a lot of our physical capacities. When we outsource something, it enables us to increase our capacity. We can do more of that. So it outsources and it enhances, right? And we did that with our physical abilities. And the Industrial Revolution, the first Industrial Revolution, was the biggest, the most prominent example of that, where we were able to produce a lot more stuff, and we were able to have for the first time mechanization in factories. Then the next thing is that we are outsourcing, or we have outsourced since the start of the digital revolution. And actually, I would say since the beginning of the time when we created the first computers, so we started to outsource our brain, right? So our cognitive abilities. Yep. So when you use a calculator, you're outsourcing your brain, your cognitive abilities. So the next thing, the last thing, the only other thing that's left for us is our emotional capabilities. And once that is also outsourced, because we are already doing that, you know, where there are people that are maybe talking or using, interacting with their machines more than they are interacting with humans. And this will be increasing over time. So increasingly, I mentioned Ray Kurzweil in the beginning. Ray Kurzweil wrote a book in the 1990s. It was called Age of the Spiritual Machine. And in it, he says that eventually we will be in a position where a majority of communication on Earth is happening between computers, between machines, like two machines. And then it will be between human and machines. And the least amount of communication will be between human and human. So that's like we are increasingly outsourcing all of these things. Like I gave the example of if you're cooking food, you're outsourcing your digestion to fire. So likewise, when we use these technologies that we are surrounded by, we are outsourcing. So recruiting, when it comes to recruiting, there's going to be two kinds of roles that we're going to be recruiting for. There are roles that are going to be replaced, you know, pretty soon. So like, so there's that this interim, you know, we talk about this transition, period. So we will reach a level of plateau. We will get to a point where it will be quite clear what tasks we need humans for, and what tasks we are going to need. We can outsource to machines. Very soon, in the next, I'd say 5 years or so, we will get to a plateau level, and I think we will be left with about 10% roughly about 10% of tasks that we are going to need humans for. And those are going to be so complex that you really don't want to be really using machines. You know, I think that's the level where you do want to, you know, find the right people for those, because those people need to have those four human skills. You know, then to give you an example, even when when it comes to things like creativity, you know, like in the past, you used to be able to hire, you would think like designers, right? You would bring in somebody and say, you know, I want you to design something for me. And you marveled in their creativity. But actually now, all of that can be generated by AI, and in many ways it can be done more interestingly, more much better, because the AI can pull from so many different sources, whereas one human is bringing from only one human's intuition and sources. So for example, we used to think of music as a creative task, but actually in the book I talk about contextual creativity as opposed to normal creativity. So normal creativity is like, you know, or artistic creativity or narrow creativity, It's like things like music and design and painting and things like that. All of those can be done by machines. And there are already examples where, you know, for example, the machine has created music that sounds better than, you know, Bach. And Bach lovers have thought that was Bach, you know. So increasingly those tasks are going to go. So the kind of creativity that I'm talking about, let's think about, I always give this example of iPod. You know, when Steve Jobs came up with the idea of iPod, that's contextual creativity. And that's the kind of people that we need, you know, like mm-hmm. the creme de la creme, you know, the top 10% of engineers and you know, people who are going to be really present and engaged in their work. And then there's a top 1% of, you know, people who are like the driving force and the thinkers. I think over the next 5 years, we are going to see that, yes, we will be using algorithms to choose people, you know, but most of those jobs that algorithms, we can use algorithms to choose, they are going to be jobs that have a shelf life of about 5 years.
I want to push back for a second. Do you really think a machine can make, you know, Bohemian Rhapsody or Smells Like Teen Spirit or the Mona Lisa?
But that's where you go into contextual creativity, because that's okay. Like, you know, Bohemian Rhapsody is like about understanding the feeling of, you know, that like really absorbing. When I talk about contextual creativity, it's like you need to absorb the essence of the society at gotcha. That time, right? And you, but when you, I think like something like Bach is a lot more mathematical. To be honest, I mean, and remember, Bohemian Rhapsody has got a band, right? It's a lot more complex. It's not one person's music, you know. It's a okay. band that have put it together. So maybe it's conceivable that you could have a group of, or, you know, you could have AI developed in a way that does, if AI could break down the role of each of those people, you may be surprised by how good something could come out of it. And it may not be mm-hmm. Bohemian Rhapsody, but it may sound very pleasant to the ear. And ultimately, you know, I think you can break it down to, it's a mathematics of colors, it's a mathematics of music and tone. One of our biggest clients is Steinway Pianos. And Steinway is like the Rolls Royce of pianos. I've been working with them for the past 4 or 5 years. And I actually yeah. just filmed an entrepreneur in Germany who is an amazing musician, but he chose to go into IT because he thought that he would never make enough money from if he went into music. So he went into IT, and I interviewed him for my podcast. And actually he said that it's absolutely, you know, perceivable that AI can create better music.
Wow. Well, you heard it first here, kids. Get off TikTok, get off Netflix,
exactly.
Do your math. The book is Career Fear. The author is Somi Arian. Thanks so much for joining us, Somi. We really appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm just a poor boy. Nobody loves me. Somi, if somebody wants to learn more about you, where would you send them?
You know what? These days, you just Google the person, you know, Somi Arian, and all of my social media links come up. So Somiarian. Google me.
Love it.
She knows search engine optimization. I love it.
Chad, another podcast in the books.
We out. Thank you for listening to, what's it called? A podcast. The Chad. The Cheese. Brilliant. They talk about recruiting. They talk about technology. But most of all, they talk about nothing. Just a lot of shout-outs of people you don't even know. And yet, you're listening. It's incredible. And not one word about cheese. Not one. Cheddar. Blue. Nacho. Pepper Jack. Swiss. So many cheeses. And not one word. So weird. Anywho, be sure to subscribe today on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. That way, you won't miss an episode. And while you're at it, visit www.chadcheese.com. Just don't expect to find any recipes for grilled cheese. It's so weird. We out!
You've got questions, we've got answers. Business leadership, ownership, and sales can be challenging. tune into the Accelerate Your Business Growth podcast to learn from the world's experts. Join me, your host, Diane Helbig, as I chat with people who have expertise in various areas of business. You'll enjoy the lively conversations that are focused on providing you with the ideas, tips, and suggestions you need to realize greater success. Get what you need for your business when you need it from the people who have the answers. Accelerate Your Business Growth is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network and is available on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.